welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Center for Timely Events here at Car Talk.
And we are timely, man. We are timely.
Well, just to show how timely we are, we just had our Dewey Cheatham and Howe company Christmas party this past week.
Well, yeah, I think it was only right.
Yeah, well, we figured it would be less stressful to have a Christmas party in late January, you know, after the holidays are all over.
It makes sense. It makes sense.
It does. And since we waited until after Christmas, we didn't have to buy any presents for all the deadbeats that were for us. Hey, just to mention a few little things about the
party. Highlights.
This year's theme was Hawaii.
Yeah.
And of course, everyone was encouraged to wear Hawaiian shirts. And
which, of course, we always have on anyway.
And Doug was good enough to provide grass skirts for those who cared to wear one. And it was a great joy. And it made my heart skip a beat to see John Bugsy, Sebastian, Mr. Height, Sweet Cheeks, Twinkle Toes, et cetera, slip into a pair of tandem.
Is he something? Is he something in a grass skirts?
It's grass skirts.
We had to tie four of them together to get them around him.
But he looked great, didn't he?
He did, man.
Especially when he was swaying to the music.
He's got nice legs, doesn't he? Hey, listen, I have a touching little...
What was that tattoo he had in his head? Steinway, I think it was.
Here's a touching story.
Really?
Look, there's a picture here of a cute little, I know now, two-year-old girl.
That's what it looks
Get like. This. Please excuse... This is from Karen Lovett from Micanopy, Florida.
Okay.
I think you pronounce it that way. Please excuse the extreme tardiness of this letter. I know how much you love to read your mail, and I really should have sent it 2 years ago. You see, 2 years and 4 months ago, I was greatly pregnant. Uh-huh. I was quite sure the child would be a boy and only had a boy's name selected. My very practical husband kept insisting on a girl's name, too, just in case. Well, it was 2 weeks before the due date. Right after your show, my husband again brought up the discussion of a girl's name, just in case. So... my husband suggested the just-in-case name should be Tommy Ray. How about that? I knew in my heart of hearts that we would not need that name, but God has a sense of humor. Enclosed, please find a copy of Tommy Ray's birth announcement in a recent photo. She named her daughter after you and me.
Yeah, but how come Ray? Why isn't it Ramey Tom? Why is it?
Sounds stupid. And this is a picture of this cute little
Tommy
girl.
Ray.
Tommy Ray, love it.
I love it.
Touched. I am touched, man.
I am too. Wow.
Does that mean that we have some obligation to this child, like to send her a baseball hat?
No, we're godparents.
We're godparents.
Yeah.
My God. I'm going to start saving for the kids' college education now. I'm going to send you $1,000, Karen. Yeah, you wait.
Anyway, if you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Jamie. I'm calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico. I have a 1991 Toyota Tercel.
Wait, you said your name is Jamie?
Jamie from Albuquerque.
Jamie from Albuquerque. That's right.
Got you. You're going awful fast. We got the 91 Tercel, and I'm still working on spelling Albuquerque, but I'll abbreviate.
What's up?
I'm losing a lot of oil. I lose about 2 quarts every 600 miles. I've already replaced the valve cover gasket on my car, and I bought an oil pan gasket to replace to try and see if that would help. My question is, am I on the right track, and what else can I, what do I do if that doesn't fix it?
So,
how much oil did you say you're losing?
About 2 quarts every 600 miles or so.
So a quart every 300 miles.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot, but... not as bad as Tommy's Fiat. You know, are you sure?
I lose a quart, no miles. Just sitting there, it just loses it.
Right, he had his car parked in a parking garage in Harvard Square, and they called the EPA on him. Anyway, I question whether or not it's leaking or burning or maybe some combination. Do you see when you've parked the car or let it idle for a period of time, do you see a big puddle underneath that grows the longer it stays there?
Well, the problem is I live in an apartment, so I park just kind of wherever in the parking lot. And same thing at work, I don't have a spot. So it's hard to tell for sure. I do, not every time I turn on my car, but a lot of times when I turn on my car, there's a kind of grayish cloud that comes out the back.
That's where most of the oil, I mean, you could, as an exercise, change the oil pan gasket. But
okay.
I don't think it's going to amount to a hill of beans.
Really?
No, it's more likely that the oil that you're using or disappearing, the oil that's disappearing is coming out the tailpipe.
What can I do about that?
Well, you could put a coffee can back there and hope that you condense it back into oil.
It's not likely that it's going to work.
No, you can do nothing about it.
No.
But the fact that you have a car that's, 20 years old.
Right.
Well,
I guess that's kind of another question I have is, at what point in time do I give up on my car? It's not worth paying a mechanic. It's so old, so I've just been fixing stuff on it myself.
Well, the problem is, in order to fix this problem, it's going to cost a lot of money.
Right.
How many miles are on this thing at this point?
It's got about 134,000.
134. Have you tried any of the magic elixirs? Because there are various products on the market that claim to subdue oil consumption.
I haven't. I haven't heard about it.
Well, this is the first step, then.
Yeah, this is absolutely the first step. Return the oil pan gasket.
Okay.
I even though that may be leaking some, I doubt that that's the lion's share of the consumption.
Okay.
And you're going to buy a product, if you can find it, called Restore.
Restore.
Yeah. And if they don't have that, buy two or three other products with similar claims. And you'll find one. It's possible that maybe your rings are stuck.
Okay,
or maybe you have some leaks from some seals, and these products do help a little bit, but don't go changing any oil pans. The other place these things always leaked was something called the oil pressure switch, the thing that sends a signal to the light inside. But if that's leaking, that's a simple matter of unscrewing it and putting a new one in.
Oil pressure switch?
Yeah, do that before you do the oil pan. Find it first. It's right next to the oil filter, I believe, and you can put your hand under it while the engine's running, and if you feel that it's wet, then change that thing. And that may account for half of that consumption.
Okay.
Who knows? Good luck.
All right.
Call us when you're ready for a new car, right?
We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Bye-bye, Jamie.
Bye. Thanks.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Wow, I'm on with the movie stars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's us.
We were in a movie?
I saw your movie the other day when I was waiting in the dentist's office.
Oh, you saw Cars.
Yeah.
How do we look? We look good?
You look great. I'm from the home of all that stuff. I'm from Orlando, Florida. My name is Rick.
Hey, Rick.
And I drive one of those very rare and exotic cars. You hardly ever see them on the highway, called a PT Cruiser.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Boy, that car was that caused quite a stir when it was introduced.
Yeah, well, I don't think they stirred it enough.
It didn't stir enough. No. And,
no.
And I knew it was destined to failure when all the young guys who stopped me in the street and asked if it had an 8-cylinder engine, and I told them no. And then they said, well, it must have a 6. I said, no. They said, well, it must have a turbo 4. I said, well, no. I knew that they weren't going to succeed. But anyway, go ahead.
I've been having a lot of different problems with it. The one I'm calling you about is I park on an incline, and every time I start it, about a minute into the process, driving down the road or whatever, there's an explosion under the hood.
Really?
Yeah.
Evidently not big enough to cause permanent damage.
No, it's not a huge explosion. It's just kind of a backfire.
Yeah, it's a backfire, yeah.
Give us an idea of how old this vehicle is, how many miles are on it.
It's an 04.
04?
04.
About 50K.
And give us the conditions under which the boom occurs.
First thing in the morning, within 1 minute of startup.
And does the boom occur when you step on the gas or when you're just sitting there?
Usually when I step on the gas.
It sounds like a classic case of an engine misfire. These things have a reputation for having bad coils. And if you have a bad coil that's occasionally causing a spark plug not to fire, the next time that cylinder does fire, it'll send a spark and ignite that mixture, but also the other part of the mixture that escaped and is now in the exhaust stream and never got combusted.
And boom.
And you get your boom.
Boom. But the boom seems to be coming from under the hood.
Yeah, that's exactly where it is. That's where the engine is, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, most of the engine is under there.
it's coming from under the hood, but it's coming from from where the exhaust first leaves the engine.
Okay.
Okay, in the exhaust manifold. There could be backfiring even through the intake. You know, but the,
okay.
But the fact that it happens only once kind of puzzles
me. Yeah, once and we're done. Until I stop it, let it sit, and start it again.
Are there any other conditions which can bring it about? If, for example, if you've driven it for an hour and parked it and come back and restart it, will it then do it?
Almost never.
Almost never.
But not completely never.
So I'm thinking it's a temperature-related thing, and it has to do with perhaps a sensor that's not working up to snuff.
Okay.
Is it less likely to happen in real hot weather?
No.
You sure? I would have, Rick, that answer would have been really, really good. A yes to that question would have been really, really good.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Would you like to reconsider?
Would you like a lifeline?
We could make believe you have an answer.
How about 50-50? Well,
I took it to my friend Juan, who rebuilds wrecked cars, and he listened to it. And he verified that it really did sound like a backfire.
Well, you're going to have to take it someplace and leave it and let them corroborate that it is. And what they will do is they can put the scanner on it, and it will be able to tell, your computer will be able to tell the scanner how many times the engine's misfired, if in fact that's what it is.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and then you can address it. And I'm guessing it's the coil.
Okay.
I actually agree with my brother.
So I guess that I probably shouldn't take it back to my friend Juan, because all he told me was to call you.
Yeah, Juan might be the wrong guy. Yeah. You may want to try somebody with a scan tool.
Okay.
Good luck, Rick.
Thanks very much, guys. See, I love your show.
We love you, too. See you later, man. Take care. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Laura. I'm calling from Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Laura?
Lauren.
Laura.
Laura, that's Just what I thought you said.
Kalamazoo.
Yeah?
I'm not going to sing my little song.
Oh, darn.
I got a gal. What a great song.
Oh, yeah, it was. The first 400 or 500 times.
Would
yeah.
anyone know anything about Kalamazoo were it not for that song? I mean, is Kalamazoo noted for anything else?
I have no idea.
See? Not even you know.
So what's up, Laura?
Well, over December, I was going to go home for 3 weeks, and this is my first winter having a car in the snow, and so I was all worried about leaving my car for 3 weeks. I was afraid it wouldn't start when I got back. So I asked one of the professors here about what I should do, and he told me this story, so I need to know if this could really happen or not. He said that he had a brother who was in the military, like in the early 60s, and it wasn't in this country. He was like in the Himalayas or something where it was freezing cold. And what they used to do is they used to keep one of their cars running overnight, a Jeep or a Toyota, something. I don't remember what it was.
Right.
And then the next morning they would take some tube and they would put it in the exhaust pipe of the running car and then stick in the exhaust of the car that wouldn't start, and that's how they'd start all their cars. So I'm wondering, is this for real, or could you really do that?
Just like an exhaust transfusion or something?
I don't know. Like some little
they would take the exhaust and put it into the exhaust pipe?
Yeah, they would use some tube, apparently. He said it was some military secret. The guy couldn't even tell him for like a couple of years that this was going on.
And where was this? Was in Nepal?
It was in India.
The Himalayas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gee, I mean, when you started to explain this, I thought you were going to say they were going to take the exhaust and use it to warm up other car. You're saying that they would do an intravenous exhaust.
I know what they did. I know what they were doing. They would end off heating up a couple of cylinders whose exhaust valves happened to be open. So by pumping exhaust from one car into the other, it would force that hot air.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
So could you do that
Sherpa
today
guys.
With the
I can see them doing it now. Can you what?
Could you do that today with the car?
Yeah,
like if my car wouldn't start, could I do that?
Well,
yes, you could.
I mean, it wouldn't help if your battery were dead, for example. But I suppose so. Yeah, I never thought about it until this very moment.
I mean, you'd have to have. I mean, I assume if it's so cold that the batteries are all dead except for the vehicle that's been running all night.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had jump start for the battery and you do this trick with the exhaust, I guess it works. I've never tried it. I mean, but these are only under the severest of conditions. I mean, you don't have to do this. Most cars will start. I mean, even in Kalamazoo, I don't think it's as cold as the Himalayas.
Yeah, I mean, it isn't that cold in Kalamazoo.
I guess not. It seems cold.
But that is an interesting trick, I guess. For dire circumstances, it would be an interesting thing to try. Yeah.
All right.
Why not? And I suppose if any of the intake valves were open, and imagine these vehicles were obviously old vehicles which had carburetors, it would serve to actually send warm air through the carburetor and the intake manifold and make the...
And warm up the fuel.
Warm up the fuel. Jeez.
Wow.
This is brilliant.
Revolution.
So who is this guy that told you? Is it one of your professors?
Uh-huh.
Is his name like Indiana Jones?
No.
What does he teach?
Sociology.
Sociology.
He knows something about everything, though, so...
Those college professors, they do know about everything, don't they?
Crazy.
Yeah.
It's great.
What a guy.
Well, I wanted to check him out with you, so.
Laura, tell him he's got our seal of approval. and the other harebrained ideas that he has, let him call us. he can communicate them through you.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That is good.
Gee, I like it.
I like it, too.
I'm going to try it in your car tomorrow. All right, Tommy, do you remember anything about last week's puzzler? Didn't think so. Well, it concerned a vastly underappreciated topic, Bedouin tourism. I'll have the answer in just a minute, so stay tuned.
I remember now.
I've got a car that's always stuck in the last gear. It starts and it goes if you leave it alone, but you can't steer. Taking it out for a Sunday drive on the back roads, and it waits till I'm far away from home, and the sun is getting low. And wouldn't you know it, she's breaking down again, pulling her over onto the shoulder.
And even though Carl Castle wonders if that job-selling aluminum siding is still available, whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk...
Yeah, like you're a parent and need a scared straight punishment for your kids.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean...
old. Previously aired,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, I know you didn't like this one.
No, I don't remember. I remember it was about Bedouins, but I don't remember anything
well,
else.
Well, I remember you started ridiculing it right from the start, saying that the Bedouins had nothing to do with it, and I contrived the whole thing. Here it is. Two Bedouins are crossing the desert on their camels. You with me so far?
Yeah, yeah.
It's early in the morning, and they come across a suitcase in the sand that's partially open. There are no tracks of any kind surrounding it.
Oh, I remember this.
They look at the suitcase, and all they see is Western-style clothing, so they move on. Right?
I gotcha.
They leave it there, and they continue on their journey to the oasis. A little while later, they find another suitcase in the sand. Same thing. It's open and clothes are strewn about. They go on, thinking of nothing but this suitcase. A little while later, they come across a video camera in the sand. A little while later, they find shoes, hats, pants, shirts. They continue on their journey. Finally, they see a man in his underwear, obviously dead, lying face down in the sand, grasping a piece of straw. The question is, what happened?
Well, you know, the only thing that had me stumped was the piece of straw.
Really?
Then that's the biggest clue, of course.
It is the biggest clue.
Otherwise, I figured the guy fell out of an airplane.
So close. He was grasping the short straw. He was part of a party that was trying to make a hot air balloon trip across the desert. And as they began to lose altitude...
Someone had to go.
They began to throw off
suitcases. Oh, this is bogus! The short straw, and he held on to it all the way down from 20,000...
Nothing he had other than his shorts! And they began to throw off suitcases, shoes, and all the clues were there.
And finally him.
And finally... They said, we're going to crash, someone's going to go, and they'd already thrown the sandbags off. And, of course, what do they have? The basket is made out of what? Straw. They strip off a few pieces, they hastily pull straws, and this poor bastard has to jump overboard.
You have sunk to a new low.
Really?
You have fallen into the abyss of crap. I have never heard a more bogus...
I thought it was...
Grasping a straw.
I think you failed to grasp
the beauty?
The beauty and the elegance of it. There's only one answer. It's a one-answer riddle. Philistines, I'm dealing with Philistines. And none of you got it, and that's why you think it's bad.
Oh,
jeez.
Man.
I'm telling
Boy,
you.
You are going to get... I don't want to be near your computer when the mail comes in.
Really, huh?
Because you are going to be bombarded.
If you think this one was bad, wait till you hear the next one.
Oh, man.
Anyway, do we have a winner? Of course not.
Well, we do. We're going to just give someone the prize because no one figured this one out. The winner is George Hassapadis,
maybe? I would say Hassapadis.
From, of all places, Arlington, Massachusetts. Who actually did send his answer to us on a fish, a plastic fish, thankfully. And for having his answer selected at random from among those thousands of correct answers, none. George gets a $25 gift certificate to the Car Talk's Shameless Commerce Division. And with this certificate, he can get our CD, Why You Should Never Listen to Your Father When It Comes to Cars. Congratulations, George, and thanks for the fish. By the way, it floats, the fish. We put it in water, try to revive
not
it.
Not all fish float, you know.
When they're dead, they do.
No, they don't.
They don't?
Well, I know sharks, you know, if they stop moving, right to the bottom.
Oh, yeah, well, they're not fish, though.
No, what are they?
They're big things.
We'll have a new, maybe not so lousy puzzler coming up.
Maybe not so lousy. You couldn't get lousier.
Wait, it'll be coming up in the third half of today's show, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, you can call us and ask us questions or say anything you want. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Barry in Greenville, North Carolina.
Hi,
Barry. You don't even know where you live.
Well, I used to live in South Carolina.
The story's about South Carolina.
All right.
Oh, okay.
Shoot.
It was during Christmas, and we were driving down I-95, and it was right before dark, or just getting dark, and I lost the radio signal.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I noticed that my lights were dimming. So I'm driving an 84 Dodge pickup.
Yeah.
Well, I start to pull off to the side of the road, and passenger screams that there's a bridge right there, so I stomp on the gas and avoid the bridge. And
was it your wife?
Well, my wife was actually in the back of the truck in a camper. And about this point, she yells that there are balls of fire coming out of the back of the truck.
This is an exciting little vacation you took.
Oh, it was thrilling. And
balls, great balls of fire.
Really?
Yeah, okay.
So we find, you know, by that point, the truck dies.
Yeah, I'm
not expected. Which just has to be expected. And we pull off to the side of the road and get out and try and figure out what was going on. And we look back up the road, and the side of the highway's on fire.
No kidding.
So anyway, I got on the cellular phone, and I called the highway patrol, and I asked for a state trooper and a tow truck. And a fire truck, not necessarily in that order.
And by the way, the highway's on fire.
Well, the traffic was
and a regular cheese
fire
pizza.
My way.
As long as they were coming out.
Yeah. Swing by Domino's.
Pick up a regular cheese pizza.
I'm sorry. We're sorry. We didn't mean to make light of your tale of woeward intrigue.
In retrospect, I think it's wonderful.
Well, it brings up an interesting question. If you have a cellular phone, can you order a pizza and have the Domino guy chase you all over town trying to deliver it?
Tried that one yet. Yeah,
and will you get it for free if he doesn't make it in half an hour?
So anyway, where were we? The highway's on fire.
The highway's on
Your
fire.
Your wife was screaming in the back. Okay, I got it.
The fire truck shows up, and they put out the fire, and the state trooper's there, and the tow truck comes to haul me off. And the fire starts back up again as we're being towed off.
Really?
Well, I never found out exactly what happened with the fire. I had more pressing matters at that point. So they dropped us off at a gas station and told us that in the morning they'd look at it.
All right.
In the morning, the truck started right back up.
Hmm.
Whereas the night before, it was not going anywhere. But it was discharging.
Exactly.
So the local mechanic put a new alternator in.
I like it.
The truck.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I've had no problems.
Yeah.
The question is, where did the balls of fire come from?
Because, I mean, when you first described the problem of the headlights dimming and the radio signal disappearing, I said alternator to myself. You may even have heard me because my thoughts are very loud.
I had the telepathic message.
But then when you got to the great balls of fire, I must admit, I was puzzled. And I am still puzzled, and it's possible. How long has it been since this all happened?
Christmas.
It's Christmas.
And it's been running fine ever since?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would have to suspect that you didn't start the fire.
No. As a matter of fact, you did start the fire.
You think so?
Yeah. You did start the fire because your wife said, she was an eyewitness, there were balls of fire coming from the back of your truck.
Well, I mean, she didn't actually see them coming out of the back of the truck. She was in the truck. It would have been impossible for her to be an eyewitness unless you were hanging out the back. How could he have started the fire?
Well, I'm working on that.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect that the fire was there, except if it was there, you would have seen it because you were driving along. Of course, you couldn't even see a bridge.
It seems awfully coincidental that two disastrous things, should have happened simultaneously without any connection between them. Don't you find that awfully fishy?
Look, it's called coincidence.
Yes.
Yes, I find it coincidental.
What do you think, Barry? Do you think you were responsible for setting the South Carolina on fire?
Well, I'm not going to say my name is Sherman, and it was Georgia by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
I always assumed that I was, but I haven't been able to talk to anybody who could understand it, and I figure with your great expertise, you might have some kind of...
Yeah, we let you down.
Aren't you disappointed?
We let you down because even we can't come up with any kind of plausible, logical reason.
Let me just ask one question, and then we can put this to rest.
Two-tone blue.
Wise guy. When you lost the radio signal and the lights began to dim...
Did it backfire?
Did the engine begin to run poorly, too?
That's probably about the point when I stomped on the gas to avoid the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
And that's when...
Well, here's what I think.
Broke loose.
Here's a feasible scenario.
We'll be the judge of that.
You'll see, when you hear it, you'll say,
"Woof!
No kidding." You'll say, it's possible. When the alternator conked out and the thing began to run poorly, indeed, you had fewer than 12 volts being generated, and you were running off the battery and running it down. Not only did your radio signal and your headlights suffer, but so did the spark plugs.
Of course.
The spark plug voltage was reduced, and as a result, the combustion in the cylinders was incomplete. Therefore, there was raw gas, unburned gas, loading up the exhaust system.
Ooh, I like
it. He likes it. I see he likes it. And, in fact, this contributed to the balls of fire coming out the back because the exhaust was... The catalytic converter and the exhaust system were combusting the gas that wasn't getting burned in the cylinders, and that was coming out the tailpipe. And you set the damn state of South Carolina on fire.
See, that's good, Frank.
Isn't it?
That is good. I like... Barry,
yeah.
I think he's got it.
Okay, well, you got any suggestions for new trucks? Don't do that.
Yeah, two-tone blue. Actually, you cannot go wrong with a Ford F-150.
Okay.
See you, Barry.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Hey, thanks for your call. You were a lot of fun. You gave me the best laugh of the day.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Deanie. And I'm calling from Richland, Washington.
Deanie.
Yes.
D-I-N-I?
No.
D-E-E-N-E-E?
No.
D-I-N-E-E?
No.
D-E-A-N-E-Y?
No.
Wait a minute.
All right, hold it now. Deanie. D-E-I-G-N-Y.
Do you want me to help you?
Yeah, we
D-E-N-I-E.
Give up.
D-E-A-N-I-E.
D-E-A-N-I-E.
D-E-A-N.
I got
it.
Yeah.
I got it. Interesting.
Like Dino, but with an I-E instead.
Well, Deanie.
No, I wasn't thinking that
No,
way.
Dino is D-I-N-O.
Yeah, no, Deanie.
D-E.
Yeah, Deanie.
Is that your first name or last name?
That's
That's my first name.
It's an unusual first name, you've got to admit.
You are the first Deedee to call us.
Is this a made-up name, or is this your given name?
Well, my middle name is just Dean, D-E-A-N, and then this is a nickname.
So your name is Deenie Dean.
So how bad is your first name that you ended up with Deenie?
Sure, what could it possibly be?
My first name is Elisa.
Oh, what a sweet name.
Yeah.
That happens to be my dear mother's name.
You know, it's a coincidence. It's my mother's name.
My God, that's three Elisas all at once here.
Jeez.
Imagine that.
Anyway, Deedee, what's on your mind? Where are you from anyway?
Richland, Washington.
Richland, Washington.
I paid attention.
I wasn't. I was trying to spell her name.
All right.
What's
up,
Deedee?
Okay, well, thanks for calling, Deedee.
What's on your mind?
Well, my father and my husband are having kind of a disagreement about when is the most accurate time to check the oil.
Yeah.
And whether the engine is cold or whether it should be warm.
I have to say that these are among the most difficult solutions here.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have a controversy between a father and a husband, boy, are you put in the middle of what?
Yeah. Mm. Well, it's kind of tough.
We will try to give the politically correct answer. Okay, go ahead.
Give the correct answer, feelings aside.
You heartless brute! All right, what does your father say?
My father, who is a amateur mechanic,
yeah,
says that the most accurate way is to check in when the engine is cold.
Cold.
Okay.
Started it off.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what about your dimwit husband? What does he say?
He's not a mechanic.
No.
He's an engineer, but he's not a mechanic.
Ah, the worst kind.
No.
Engineers are people who think they know how things work.
Right.
Yeah.
But they don't.
Yeah. Right.
He thinks that you should check it when the engine is warm. That if you do it when it's cold, it won't be accurate because you'll get a higher reading than you should, because more of the oil would have drained out of the engine.
You get a higher reading than you should
if you check it cold.
It'll show that there's more oil because
there's
none in the engine. And he says if you check it when it's warm, then that oil is up in the engine and it'll be more accurate.
Ah, I see.
And see, the time where it comes into problem is when we're down in Oregon visiting them a couple months ago, and we were leaving, and I said,
let's check the oil.
I was raised by my father.
Right.
Yeah,
and
your husband said, not yet, hon.
Right, let's drive 10 miles down the freeway.
And check it in the breakdown lane.
And your father said, no, you dimwit.
Right.
And then a big controversy arose.
I can
see
it.
And a big family feud.
Well, I can see
it. And now your husband and father aren't speaking to each other.
Well, it's not quite that bad.
Yet. Yeah.
Anyway, your father is right. You should check it cold.
Yeah, and in fact, if you looked in the owner's manual, it says exactly that.
Ah.
I'm surprised that your engineer husband didn't even think of doing that before he started this big family feud.
No.
Because if you check it any other time, or i.e. when the engine's hot or has been running, a certain amount of oil is up in the valve train assembly, and of course it isn't down in the pan, and what you're really checking is how much oil is in the oil pan.
Mm.
And the most accurate time to check that is when the thing's been sitting for a while. As a matter of fact, it's even easier, and I'll tell you why. You don't have to wipe off the stick if you check it cold. If you go out there in the morning and the car has been parked on a level surface, you just pull the dipstick out, and you read it, and you stick it back in.
And you're all done.
And you're all done.
So the more important issue, though,
if that isn't a compelling
reason for doing
it that way, I can't think of anything better.
But the more important issue, I think, Deedee, is how are you going to break this to your husband? He's not home now, I hope, is he?
No, he's on a trip.
He's on his trip.
Oh, he's on the trip. He drove away with that extra 2 quarts of oil in the engine. I don't know if you should tell him.
He'll believe you because he listens to you every week, so he feels kind of a bond with you, and he'll believe you.
He'll believe us, yeah.
But will he feel crestfallen, I guess is the word, and is he a man?
My theory is he'll probably still do it his way.
I'm sure he will, but stick with dear old dad.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call, Deedee.
Thank you.
See you later. All right, before we get to the new puzzler, we're going to pause so my brother can fix his hair.
Yeah, hand me the rubber cement there, will you?
Oh, you're going to need the heat gun, too, I think. We'll be back in a minute.
Faster and faster. Second.
And even though public radio interns decide to switch to investment banking whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
Please, make it better.
Oh, you're going to love this.
Go ahead.
This Bedouin is driving his car home from work late one night.
Yeah.
And the car breaks down.
I love this desert?
Puzzle. No. He lives in a big city.
He lives in
Paterson, New Jersey.
He's a Paterson Bedouin.
I like this puzzle because it requires that you think outside the box, as they say.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So to speak.
Okay, go ahead.
He calls his brother, and he says, I need help. You got to come and rescue me. My car broke down. Uh-huh. So he shows up, the brother does, many hours later with his car. They assess the situation. The first brother, whose car had broken down, says, you ready to help me? And he says, the second brother says, I can't tow you. They've got a rope, you know. He says, I can't tow you home. And the guy who broke down says, that's okay. I'll tow you home. How could this possibly be? So the guy who broke down
is going to tow his brother who came to help him.
Exactly. He said, I can't tow you home. You can't tow me home, but I can tow you home. How could this be? Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the back of a $20 bill or a half-eaten apple. Or any half-eaten fruit. And send it to
yeah,
us.
Yeah, but pears don't hold up.
They don't mail well.
They don't mail well.
You know why? The stamps don't stick on them.
That's right. But apples are good.
Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or you can email your answer from cartalk.com. If you'd like to call us, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-2278-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Diane from Arizona.
Hi, Diane.
Oh, the whole state.
Tucson.
Tucson, yes. So
what's up, Diane?
Well, the problem is I have a 1975 Chevy Nova.
That is a problem.
It's a real simple problem.
Oh, good.
I find that when I have a full tank of gas and I put my foot on the gas pedal seems to have more resistance. And my husband and I have this argument going.
He says you're nuts.
Yes.
He's right.
Don't say that. There goes my marriage.
Is there money riding on this?
What's it worth to you, Diane?
A marriage, probably.
No.
Whole marriage? No.
Diane, you sound like an intelligent, perceptive person.
However.
No however to it. And
Are you taking issue with the fact that I said she was nuts?
Yeah, and I think that if you feel that there's something wrong, you may not be describing it in technical terms.
Well, it's not
Would you
wrong.
Take some touchy-feely course this month or what?
Yes. Tell us what you mean by what you said.
I don't think it's something wrong. It's just an argument that my husband and I have. If the tank is at a quarter, an eighth, and I go and I get the tank filled, then I feel that the gas pedal has resistance. When I have less gas in it, I feel like I have to push it down a little bit further. And he's hysterical because he says there's no way that could happen.
And so, in other words, you feel that in order to make the car go the same speed, you have to step on the gas pedal further.
Well, you know, it's not entirely impossible, and I'll give you a little scenario for this, too.
Is it further or farther?
Take the limiting case. If you had a car that was so horribly underpowered, right?
Yeah.
And you added 5,000 gallons of gas.
No, man. If you add just 15 gallons of 8 pounds per gallon gas, 6 pounds per gallon gas,
90
you're
pounds.
Adding 100 pounds or so of extra
pounds.
Weight, which would make this be true. So your husband is absolutely incorrect, Diane. How's that? Did I get out of that one all right?
Yeah, very, very nice.
But it's unlikely the addition of 80 or 90 pounds of fuel would make much of a difference to a over 3,000-pound car.
Yeah.
You know, so
I think you're nuts, Diane.
Negligible difference.
Please, I'm going to have to live with this the rest of my life.
This is an opportunity for your husband and you to understand each other and to understand each other's different kinds of feelings about things.
It'll
open up a whole new world for
you. There's no opportunity for that. I can just see her husband now. I told you, Diane.
Exactly.
Well, if that's the kind of guy he is, dump him.
There you go. But does this do this all the time? I mean, can you?
Yes.
If you were to be blindfolded, of course you couldn't drive well if you were blindfolded, okay. unless yes. you drove like my brother.
Doesn't work in your case.
but if you were blindfolded, would you know if the tank had just been filled up?
Well, that's a good test, question. Isn't it?
No, but my foot might.
Well, that's here's the thing to do. Wait till it gets down to an eighth of a tank.
Okay.
Give the car to your husband.
He
will drive away.
Uh-huh. And not come
and
back.
And be gone for 15 or 20 minutes. Maybe he won't come back and you'll be lucky.
Right.
He'll be gone for 15 or 20 minutes. Then he'll come back, blindfold you and put you in the car.
Okay.
Take it into an empty parking lot.
Okay.
And say, you drive the car and he'll ask you, well, did I fill it up or didn't I?
Here's what we'll do. We will call you back in 3 weeks.
And you try it.
Okay.
And you try it and let us know what happens.
But you've got to do it a couple of times. We need some reliability here.
Okay.
Will you honestly do it, Diane?
Sure.
Because we'll be calling. We'll find you no matter. You can't hide from us.
Can't hide, huh?
See you, Diane.
Okay.
Good
Thanks
luck.
Bye-bye.
That was
Bye.
A good question.
Yeah,
good
it was.
Question.
Crummy answer, but we'll give us a chance in the next 3 weeks to work on it. 1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Wolfgang Ruckner in Cambridge.
Wolfgang!
How you doing?
Oh, good. Wolfgang, for those of you who don't know, is our resident staff expert on physics.
Yeah, we had a question for him.
Yeah, I'm calling about Christopher, who called about drafting.
Ah!
Yeah, and the question was, if a car is following, for example, a truck and getting pulled along in its slipstream, or whatever we used to call that thing, does it affect the mileage of the car that's out in front?
Yeah.
Does it lower that person's mileage? And Tommy said, of course not. And I said, of course it's got to.
Mm-hmm.
So we figured that we were both wrong. We didn't know how we could both be wrong, but we figured we had to be, and we had to call you, and we're happy that you called back, and you're here to enlighten us.
Right. My gut reaction was to agree and say, well, of course he has to get worse mileage. Then I started arguing with myself, and I think I won the argument. You're both wrong.
I knew it.
We're both wrong.
You're both wrong.
All right.
The lead car is going to get better mileage also.
Really?
Whoa.
Yeah. And here's the way I...
Well, doesn't that make me right? I said he wouldn't get worse mileage.
Are you a lawyer?
I suppose that kind of makes you right. But go ahead, explain. So
explain this, though, Wolf. How can that be?
Okay.
I hope you're wrong. Because this would be an encouragement for everybody to tailgate.
I hope I'm not wrong, because then I'll be embarrassed.
All right, well, go ahead.
Okay. When you just have one car, the car needs to park the air in front of it, push it aside, and the air that ends up going behind the car is really turbulent with vortices and all kinds of turbulence, and it mm-hmm. creates a kind of low-pressure region behind the car. So not only does it have to push the air aside, but there's going to be a difference in pressure on the car between the rear and the front, low pressure in the back and higher pressure in the front.
Oh, so that's sucking the car backwards, kind of.
Sort of. It doesn't really suck the car. It's just there's not as much pressure pushing the car in the back as mm-hmm. there is in the front.
Got it.
Okay. So when the car comes behind and drafts the car in front...
Yeah.
Clearly, the car in the back is going to win because it doesn't need to push air aside.
Right. It's not breaking wind anymore,
right.
as we say.
But the car in front, the lead car, is also going to gain because it no longer has that low-pressure pocket behind it. It's behind the back
car. The second car, of course.
So it doesn't have to deal with that. So it gains a little, too. So, I mean, together, the two cars kind of make a more efficient shape that goes through the air.
Oh, Wolfgang, this is so counterintuitive.
Now, how about if you had a third car?
Yeah, I mean, that means if you lined up 10 cars, they'd all gain.
They'd all gain a little, yeah. Because there's going to be, in the end, in the very rear, less turbulence than there would be with just one car. it's a better shape that moves through the air. I was thinking of it sort of like a boat hull. The longer the boat hull is, the faster the race boat will go. For the same reason that a long, long hull is going to, in the end, create less turbulence and drag in the water.
So if we had appropriate collision avoidance devices, it would make sense for cars to travel in little quanta.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So 10 or 12 cars at a time, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, okay, everyone getting off in Buffalo.
Right. Turn on
line
your right
up right here.
Jeez.
So that was my final thinking, and I hope I'm right.
Yeah, what happens if you're wrong? Is there any kind of punishment?
I think you're going to get a lot of emails, and I'm going to hear about it.
Oh, I think so. Well,
if we do, we'll send them all to you.
Okay.
Well, it'll be good for someone else to take the heat once in a while, because we certainly get enough emails for our wrong answers. Let's see what happens to you.
Okay.
But no matter what the outcome, thanks, Wolfgang.
Well, thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wolfgang, we should have mentioned, teaches physics at Harvard University. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Wow, this is very...
Well, you know, I mean, like all good arguments, it's so convincing.
Well, all positions are plausible in this case. My brother was right, I was right, and Wolfgang is right.
Sure he may have discussed it with some colleagues.
And he may know something that we don't know. Right. He definitely knows something that we don't know.
And we discussed it with our colleagues, but they're a bunch of morons.
You know what he knows that we don't know? Physics.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Margaret.
Hi, Margaret.
Margaret. Where are you from, Margaret?
I'm from Annapolis, Maryland.
What's up, Margaret?
I have a little Mazda Miata.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And I bought it last
great?
Summer.
Yeah.
I finally just broke down and said I wanted this little sports car and sold the Subaru wagon. And
Was this part of some therapy having to do with midlife crisis, or was this...
Sure.
Why
not? Whatever you want it to be.
It works that way.
Yeah.
But I like it.
Oh, well, who wouldn't?
Well...
Except?
I have a little problem with it.
Uh-huh.
I know this sounds stupid, but I didn't realize how poorly it would perform in the snow.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to know, since you guys know everything about everything.
Margaret, you have called the right people. It just so happens. It just so happens that our esteemed producer,
as you may know, Doug Punkin' Lips Berman,
happens to own a Mazda Miata.
Oh, great.
And when he first got it, he said, "This thing's terrible in the snow. What am I going to do?" So he called the good folks at Mazda. And he said, "What do I do? This car is lousy in the snow." And it's lousy for a lot of reasons, one of which is that it has very low clearance. I mean, so you get hung up on things like snowballs. You drive over a snowball, all of a sudden your rear wheels are off the ground.
That's right.
Right. So assuming that you can avoid those situations, the only hope you have is to get the best snow tires.
Known to man.
And woman.
And woman.
Mm-hmm. Nokia Hakkapeliittas.
Can you
spell it? No, I can't spell it. I knew you were going to
ask
that.
Us.
They're called Nokias.
Nope.
Nokia. Hakkapeliittas. You ask anyone that sells tires if they have Nokias, and I guarantee you, they'll shrug.
Right. These are made up on Lapland.
Yeah, they're made in Finland.
The reindeer wear these on their hooves if they have them. And these are the best snow tires, literally, known to man or woman.
And you can buy them in this country?
No.
You have to go to Finland.
Oh.
But, you know, they have one of these deals. They get the tour for you. You fly there. They give you the four snow tires. You roll them around.
You go elk hunting for 2 or 3 weeks.
And then you get to bring the snow tires back
with
as
the
used snow tires.
With the elk.
So you avoid the import duties.
Right.
And you go to the factory. You get a tour. Yeah, it's a great deal.
Yeah, it is.
No, I don't know who sells them.
Well, I was told that since, you know, I'm an engineer, but I didn't go to MIT, that you guys would have the answers.
Well, then you're not a real engineer, are you?
No, but if you can't find Nokias, Michelin makes great snow tires, Pirelli makes snow, I mean, everybody makes snow tires, and I don't think the Nokias are that much better.
Yeah.
And by the way, you do have to buy four if you're going to buy them.
You do?
You want to put four snow tires on it.
And buy four wheels. Then you have to buy a trailer to go to the gas station to have them change these over.
You got
to
do it one at a time. Isn't this a pain in the butt, though? I mean, if you have this done by a gas
station, Dougie did it. He put one in his car.
You got to put one snow tire in the front seat, and you drive to the gas station, and you say, "Take off one of my snow tires and put on my regular tire." Then you drive back home again, and you do this four times.
Well, I guess we answered that question for you, huh, Margaret?
Four snow tires is the answer, and it will be, I think, quite acceptable in the snow.
It would be adequate as long as you avoid getting it hung up.
Well, I filled the trunk up with salt bags. But
well, that may even reduce your ground clearance even more. I mean, so there's a fine line between having too much weight and too little.
Oh, I see.
Good snow tires. Good big round ones. Not wide. Big, okay. round, big in diameter. Increase that ground clearance.
Okay.
Good luck, Margaret.
Thank you.
And pretty soon, the sun will be out again.
And you'll be able to drive this car like it was intended to be driven.
That's right, with the top down.
With the top down. See you later.
Margaret, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, you've done it again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mayor, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our engineer is John Cartman-Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from his photo finish at the Piscataway Pizza Pimento and Pinot Grigio Pitch and Putt, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marjan Overa. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our long-distance truck driver is Etienne Wheeler. Our director of top secret strategy is Donatello Nobody. And our solicitor of new ideas is OB Quiet. Our sexual harassment investigator is Hank Pankey. The pre-recorded portions of today's show were selected by staff librarian, all been heard before. Our rental property manager is Ulysses Up. Ulysses Up.
Ulysses Up.
Our construction manager is Dustin Dubree. The president of the Disgruntled Hatchback Owners Club is Ivana Trunk. Our Russian chauffeur is Bikov and Dropov. And our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey Cheatham Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the icicle-covered tourists in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1404, download classic Car Talk episodes, and check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com, where this week we ask the question, what's in your trunk?
Dude, the last time someone asked that question, Uncle Enzo had to drop out of sight for 20 years.
No, I'm talking about highway safety, roadside survival items. You know, it's our guide to what you should keep in your trunk for roadway mishaps. For example, like Robert Caro's biography of Lyndon Johnson to read while you're waiting for the tow truck.
Yes. That's Car Talk's guide to roadside survival all week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Eskimos run to catch the next ice floe whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.